Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Monday night, not the only game Monday night, Buffalo-Atlanta at 7:15, and then Washington-Chicago at 8:15 with Buck and Aikman on the call. As I mentioned, weather could be a factor. Major nor'easter for us on Sunday into Monday. But the way it appears now, it should be out of here, but there could be wind, and that could still be a factor Monday night in the game. The Bears are coming in off a bye week and two wins in a row. They're sitting there at 2-2. Washington, obviously, off the big win over the Chargers last week. And this sets up to be a good one, not to mention the fact that there is, you know, a lot of other as it relates to this game, going back to not only the Hail Mary, but the fact that the two quarterbacks in the game were 1-2 in 2024. Joining me right now is Kevin Fishbane. Kevin covers the Bears for The Athletic. You can follow Kevin on X on Twitter at KFishBain. So, let me start with just this idea, and I've gotten this from some fans. I don't see it this way, and I don't feel it this way at all. But do you feel some sort of, like, rivalry developing between these two teams or not?
Yeah, it's a storyline rivalry a little bit when you think about the quarterbacks and, you know, Caleb Williams being from the area out there. And it's a unique setup. I was going through the head-to-head that they've played each other. This is the fifth year in a row or fourth year in a row, which is unusual for non-division teams. Now, part of that is because the Bears and Washington finished last a couple times, so they met up in that way. But, I mean, look, you can go old school, right? I mean, they've played each other in the postseason six times.
Yeah.
Going back.
Well, that, and now you're going really old school if we're going six times. Yes.
Yeah, seven times even. You go all the way back to the 40s. They play each other, it seems like, every year. So, you know, I don't know, you know, for people in Chicago, when you say the word rivalry, they will scoff at anything that is not Green Bay. They won't even maybe consider Detroit or Minnesota rivalry. But when it comes to teams not in the division, yeah, I think there are just an abundance of storylines when you talk about these two teams. I mean, shoot, you could talk about the Bears almost hired Dan Quinn. The Bears almost hired Cliff Kingsbury. And then you put that all together, what happened last year with the two quarterbacks. And, yeah, it's a fun matchup with a lot of narratives.
Yeah, Chicago has real rivals because of their length of time in the NFL and their length of time in the division that they're in, and so does Washington. I mean, it's Dallas, it's Philly, and the Giants, and, you know, for us, it was forever the Cowboys number one overall. I just think it's an interesting thing that I've been approached with many times this week, and I'm like, really? I can see what you described. But it's going to be more of a Bears narrative because Washington didn't have the choice. You know, it's going to be on sort of Chicago. Did they make the right call? And my next question to you would be, isn't it weight as great as Jaden was last year? And there's no chance I personally would flip that. I would even consider a swap Jaden for Caleb. But isn't it just way too early given Caleb's situation last year with the staff, with the coordinator, with the changes, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I think so. You know, there are two ways to look at it too, because I think there are people who are of the belief that the great quarterbacks are great right away. And the Josh Allens are few and far between. Like, there's a reason we always mention Josh Allen, because he's a unicorn in that realm. And, you know, for Jaden Daniels to do what he did, and you can look at other really good quarterbacks, and, you know, you look at Lamar and Mahomes and Herbert. Dak Prescott was phenomenal as a rookie. You can go through, you know, a bunch of different quarterbacks. They were really good as rookies and continue to be really good throughout their career. So I think that's a good sign for Jaden Daniels. But yes, as far as Caleb goes, I think it's important to remember that, you know, he was thrown into a really difficult situation. And I mean, obviously he himself didn't play as well as people expected, but you know, I think all you have to do as well is go 2 years back and look at Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. I mean, after year one, it was extremely similar. The number two pick was an absolute star. The number one pick had a really brutal rookie year, coaching change, all that. And if you look at the two now, I mean, I think you still take Stroud, but like it's not as clear cut as it was at the end of the rookie season, it seems. So, yeah, I think it's important to weigh it out. But, shoot, there are a lot of people, a lot of Bears fans who watched that run from Washington last year was like, wait a second. So you're saying we could have had Dan Quinn, we could have had Cliff Kingsbury, we could have had Jaden Daniels. We're watching this team in the NFC Championship, and our team is on to its fifth head coach in the last 13 years. There was definitely a lot of that around Chicago, but I do think that, you know, getting Ben Johnson and seeing and there is definitely hope that you know, Caleb, you know, who knows who will be the better quarterback. But yes, I'm with you. I think you gotta wait and see this out after just 1 year.
I think the one thing that's come out of the story about Caleb Williams, and there have been so many of them, and you've followed them, you know, the granular detail of all of them much more than I have. I still don't understand why they were hell-bent on just Caleb and essentially ignored all of the other quarterbacks in the lead up to the 24 draft. That is true, right? That Ryan Poles essentially didn't even consider a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May or a Penix Jr., etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of definitively say he ignored them. Like, look, nobody took an official visit to Chicago except for Caleb Williams when you talk about those 30 visits. So certainly in that realm, I mean, they locked it on Caleb pretty early. And but the scouting staff had reports on all those guys. Like, I don't know exactly what their reports were on Jaden Daniels or Drake May. I have heard there was a lot of people in the building who liked J.J. McCarthy. Not that they were going to pick him number one, certainly, but they did. I use that to bring up the example, like they did their research, like they did their diligence, but maybe it wasn't the due diligence that they should have done. But you know, it's a weird setup because in the moment, I remember a whole lot of people saying that it should have been a real, like this wasn't. We've had drafts where it's been, who are they going to take, one or two? Like in March of 2024, there weren't people saying the Bears should consider Jaden Daniels. Now, is that the media's fault? Was the media kind of bamboozled based on the evaluations and the sourcing and all the people that were all on board in Caleb? Maybe, but I think nationally speaking, it was just this fait accompli. And again, that's a public perception issue more so than a team evaluation issue. But yeah, I mean, the Bears, there were definitely some holes in their evaluation process. But I mean, the problem with the Bears, the path that led the Bears to Caleb Williams, to me, was almost more about infrastructure they put around Caleb Williams as opposed to
right.
The player. Because now you could argue that Jaden Daniels, we will look back at him down the line, that he is a transcendent player and person, and what he did in Washington was incredible, and he would have done that anywhere. Like, maybe he becomes that player. It's possible. It's also possible if the Bears drafted Jaden Daniels with Matt Eberflus as head coach and Shane Waldron offensive coordinator, it could have been just as bad as it was for Caleb Williams, because obviously there was a lot of holes in that building in terms of the support structure they had for a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson from all of these things in recent years is if you've got a head coach that, for all intents and purposes, is borderline lame duck, and you bring in some OC who's probably not attached to the head coach and may not even be around, that is just a recipe for a first-round quarterback being messed up. And by the way, sometimes irreparably, although, you know, we we've seen too many resurrections here, like the Baker Mayfields and the Sam Darnolds, to say that, you know, the Daniel Joneses, to say that anything's dead. But I do think it's important, like, when for NFL fans outside of Chicago to recognize, yes, that was a talented team that he went into roster-wise. I think it was better than Washington's, honestly, this time last year. But the coaching situation and, you know, that hierarchy, that basically coach in front office was a messed up situation for him to be going into, and would have been messed up for anybody taking that high to be going into.
Yeah, and, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I have the Caleb Williams was the third first-round quarterback I have covered whose coaching staff got fired after his rookie season. I saw it with Mitch Trubisky and John Fox. I saw it with Justin Fields and Matt Nagy. And then again with Caleb Williams, Matt Eberflus, this team just keeps doing it to himself, and they're hoping that Ben Johnson's firing the guy. They can end the cycle and move forward. But, yeah, you had a defensive head coach who had never really had experience developing a rookie quarterback. He brought in a play caller that hadn't had experience developing a rookie quarterback, and lo and behold, they struggled to develop a rookie quarterback. So, yeah, it was one of the – now, I mean, you go back to the Commanders' narrative about this to your first question, and you can sit there and say – 1 inch, how much would that have changed the season? Because obviously the Bears season was torpedoed after what happened at Northwest Stadium last year. But I think we all saw that there were holes in that thing. And shoot, the Bears offense was miserable for 3.5 quarters that late afternoon last season until Caleb brought them down for the go-ahead score. It was not the best environment. I think Kevin O'Connell has said it. It's kind of gone viral a little bit that organizations ruin quarterbacks more often than quarterbacks kind of fail their organizations.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Kevin Fishbane. He covers the Bears for The Athletic. By the way, I think that 1 inch definitely torpedoed your season much more than it uplifted ours from this standpoint. Jaden was, a bit banged up. You know, it wasn't one of his better games. He ended up throwing for 325 or something like that, but a bunch of that came on that last play. I think we had already seen signs that the team could be a pretty good team, and that they were pretty lethal at times offensively, even though they weren't in that particular game. I wanted to ask you one more question before we get to kind of really looking at the Bears and what you think we're going to get Monday night. You know, Adam Peters is pretty adamant, and I'll just tell you, I believe him because I believe that this is what they were keying in on from the very beginning, that even if he had had number one overall, he would have taken Jaden Daniels. Do you believe him?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do believe that. And now you could sit there and say, was the perspective at which they were looking at Jaden Daniels different because they had a pretty good feeling who was going in front of him? Like, you know, you could say like the way they scouted him.
Yeah, fair.
Like you know, if you're scouting Caleb Williams, you're the number two pick. Are you scouting him differently because you're sitting there being like, okay, what are we doing here? He's not going to be there. And number two. Yeah. So like I acknowledge that, but I do. I do believe him when he says that. And I think that one of the things that we've learned over the past year is that within the NFL scouting community, it was closer than maybe it was in kind of the media draft community.
No doubt.
If you will.
That, even though it gained steam at the very end with a lot of people saying, what did happen for sure is that towards the end, Jaden really, media-wise, and I think this was scout-wise and team-wise, had created some pretty decent separation from whomever was number three, turned out to be Drake May, but there were some J.J. McCarthy people in there. But I think that's what really happened is the distance between number two and number three got great, increased.
Yeah. And look, these GMs, they fall in love with quarterbacks, and to some it's a detriment. And so far for Washington, it's worked out pretty well. So yeah. So when Adam Peters says that, I believe him, but I would be curious if he actually had the number one pick, would the scouting, would it have looked differently? But you're right. I do think that it's very easy to have looked at what Caleb Williams did and all those different things about him and just say, this is the guy and we don't really need to talk about anything else. in the media, but it was much different, I think, in some of these draft rooms.
Yeah, I actually think, to put an end to this part of the conversation, I actually think that the conversation 10 years from now will be as much about all six of them in the top 12, which was record-setting, as it will be Caleb or Jaden. I think it'll work out that way. We'll see. I mean, who knows? All right, so what is Washington going to see? Because they've won two games in a row. They've got a bye week. It seems like Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams were developing something there before the bye week. Have you seen significant improvement? Is there a lot of optimism offensively in terms of what the Bears are or what they're turning into?
I think there's optimism as far as they haven't reached anywhere near their potential. The Dallas game, they looked really good for the most part, but that was a bad Dallas defense, and they could not run the ball. And that's been the Bears' biggest problem on offense, is they just can't get the running game going at all. Ben Johnson said this week he's taken that personally. He says he focuses more on the run game than the pass game, and it's been miserable through four games. So I think I think Bears fans are like, oh, wow, we are 2-2, and the offense hasn't come close to what we hope it can be with Ben Johnson at the helm. So there are some offensive line switches that have happened, and you get the bye week to self-scout and try to figure out what's going on with that run game. I mean, and the thing is, the pass game was really brutal for about three quarters in Las Vegas until the final drive. I mean, actually, in some ways, it was a very similar back-and-forth, ugly slog of a game as what happened when Chicago went to Washington. The difference this time was the Bears blocked the kick and won the game, and it was like euphoria. And I think for the Bears, and I'm always careful, and you've been around this game and sports for a long time too, and like, you always got to be careful with the intangible element, but there is this kind of thing in the locker room that's just like, okay, we've lost so many of these games, and we actually won one of them. Like, does this, like, maybe this can, like, just from a sense of, like, they all saw, like, oh, wow, this time we were the ones that blocked the kick. Like, it's possible for us to win a game like that. I think that actually did have some meaning from a confidence standpoint for those guys to head into the bye. But, yeah, I mean, I think that the good thing for them is they were all in good moods when it came to trying to correct an offense that still has a long way to go.
Has a long way to go. But it is fair to say that, especially a healthy offensive line, and you can tell me what the condition of Darnell Wright and Jonah Jackson are here in a moment heading into Monday night, but there are some really good skill position talent.
Yeah, I mean, Roma Dunze has been one of the best receivers in football through four games.
Yeah.
And the Bears, I mean, look, DJ Moore went into Washington 2 years ago and had a record-setting night.
Right.
So we all know what he's capable of. They got this rookie Luther Burden, who you talk about potential. I mean, he oozes with it. And I'll tell you what, the guy who's been maybe the most clutch receiver from camp till now has been Olamide Zaccheaus.
Yeah.
And he's somebody that I know that Washington really liked him. And he came here as kind of almost like an afterthought. Okay, well, they need a slot receiver, and then they draft Luther Burden. You're like, all right, eventually Burden will take over. When it's third down, Caleb Williams looks his way, and he's made, you know, not huge plays, but he has been an important security blanket for the quarterback. So, you know, you got Joe Tooney on that offensive line. That's made a big impact. The sack percentage is down a lot from last year. I mean, it had nowhere to go but down, but it has gone down in a big way. And again, I'm saying all this acknowledging no run game, and they used a number 10 pick on a tight end, and he hasn't really gotten going yet. And I do believe that he's going to be a good player. So there's room for this thing to grow. And I do think that there's proof of concept in that fact that we all know Ben Johnson knows how to scheme up an offense. And the Bears haven't had people like that in that position before. Like,
right.
you kind of know that he's capable. Washington certainly knows it. I know that the playoff game last year, Detroit had a lot of turnovers. They also had a lot of yards in that game. So that's kind of the outlook for this offense and why people are kind of pretty hopeful.
Tell me real quickly the health of the offensive line. I mean, Darnell Wright, I'm convinced if had he fallen in that draft, Washington had, that's who they wanted in that draft. How's he coming along? What's the health of the offensive line?
Yeah, so I'll be out of practice in a couple hours, and this is a big one for Darnell Wright. He was not out there on Tuesday or Wednesday. If he's not out there tomorrow, that's a bad sign for him right. For Monday night. He had this elbow injury, and I tell you what, watching him on the bench when he hurt that elbow against Dallas, it looked really bad. He was in a ton of pain. I couldn't believe he finished the game. So if he doesn't play, it'll be a second-round pick, Ozzie Tripillo, making his first career NFL start. And Ozzie actually did okay coming in the game against Las Vegas. He's got the size. He's got the smarts. He just took a step back in training camp. I think the speed of the game got to him a little bit. But Darnell Wright's a really good player, but consistency has evaded him a little bit over the last year and a half. He's had some penalty issues. So when Darnell Wright's out there and playing at a high level, he's really good. So it does matter if he's not going to be out there, and obviously it impacts your depth as well.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's had some good fortune in going against the Giants, Raiders, and Chargers, all of whom had key offensive linemen out for the game, and it mattered in the game. Let's flip it to the defensive side of the ball, where the most obvious numbers matchup exists. Washington's the number one rush offense in the league, and the Chicago Bears, 31st against the run. DVOA, it's like 28th against the run. I would imagine this is an area that you guys have focused on, like, how do we stop the run?
Yeah, I joked to somebody yesterday that Washington might set a record for yards per carry or rushing yards in this game. I mean, they've just when you look at that matchup, the way you laid it out, it could get ugly. And the thing about a run game is, as much as the NFL has changed, you can run the ball at ease. Nothing else matters, I think. Like it's curtains often, except for what the Bears did in Vegas when they gave up 240 rushing yards and still won. They hadn't done that in nearly 50 years. The Bears are getting T.J. Edwards back, starting linebacker. They're getting Kyler Gordon back. Their nickel corner has not played yet this season. Kyler Gordon is really important to their run defense. He actually was second on the team last year in run stuffs, stops for no gain. So Dennis Allen has talked about it was like his opening press conference in January about using Kyler Gordon as a weapon. So I'm very intrigued to see how they do that. But those guys, the front four, and those guys need to do a better job shedding blocks. So that is the matchup that we've all kind of been talking about throughout the week. You can say the Bears might be able to, you get the two players back, you've had the bye week to look at it, like it can't be worse. But that's a big advantage for Washington to be able to go against a group that just hasn't been as sound as really they should be.
Has Tyrique Stevenson bounced back off of last year's embarrassment on that Hail Mary play to have a pretty good run of games, especially this year?
Yeah, what's interesting is he had a bad game in Detroit. Now, everybody had a bad game in Detroit. The Lions scored 50 points. But Tyrique Stevenson specifically had a rough day, to the point that I think people were sitting around being like, is he going to keep his job, all these different things. Then he goes out. Second play against Dallas, he rips the ball away. Later has an interception, and then he has a diving pick against the Raiders, couple pass defense. He's playing the last 2 weeks. He is playing as well as he probably has as a Bear. And he actually had some really good moments his rookie year. The thing with Tyrique Stevenson is it's just the consistency. It's just staying in the moment and not letting the moment get too big for him, which obviously the entire world saw. Last year, he has been very open about what that moment meant to him, and what he has done in the past month. I will shout out my colleague Dan Weider, has a great story on Tyrique Stevenson up at The Athletic. What he's done in the last month that he did not do last year is he has owned up that was an egregious mistake that was. Last year, he kind of just tried to shrug it off and say, "Guys make mistakes. I made a mistake. You move on," without really fully publicly grasping what it meant. And I think he has now. He is playing with a ton of confidence. He knows what it's going to be like going in that building on Monday night. He knows the jeers he's going to get. But he's also playing really well right now. So all eyes are going to be on him. And what's been interesting is in Tyrique Stevenson's entire football career, that hasn't always gone well for him. Going back to college and high school, he's had these moments where he just has these gaffes. And so that's going to be very interesting to watch, to see how he handles it. Because, right, just seeing him and talking to him at Halas Hall and watching the way he's played the last 2 weeks, he seems as ready as he can be to kind of take that on head on. But, you know, anything can happen, and it could just take one error that he's going to have to really try to compose himself if that happens.
By the way, the Jalen Johnson being missed significantly, right? I mean, this was this was the best player on that defensive side of the ball.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big loss. Nashawn Wright, who's starting the other side, it's a good story. Came kind of out of nowhere, out of training camp to win that job. But I mean, you talk about the drop off from Pro Bowler, All Pro, yeah. Somebody that can shut down one half of the field. That is a big drama. The last 2 weeks in those two wins, teams have not been able to really get going and really challenge him. So yeah. I'll be curious to see. I'm sure Washington's going to go after him a little bit and really test him, because yeah, that is certainly just from a talent level standpoint and experience, that's a weak point in the defense.
All right, two quick ones to end up. Montez Sweat, what's he been doing in Chicago here recently?
Not a whole lot on the stat sheet. He's got one sack this year. What's interesting is I thought Montez Sweat had a really good summer. And Ryan Poles thought so too. Ben Johnson thought so too. Like, he just, you could tell in training camp, this is a guy that was ready to go. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't gotten there in games. The coaches have said that he needs to do a better job taking advantage of those one-on-one opportunities. My thing too is when a guy's, he's the highest paid player on the defensive side of the football. I don't care if there's a double team. TJ Watt gets double teamed.
Yeah, right.
He still makes plays, right? Like, I think Montez Sweat.
He's not TJ Watt, though. He was never going to be TJ Watt.
They're paying him like somebody that should, that doesn't have to, that should be able to wreck a game here and there. And again, I saw it over the summer. I thought, we could get there. He was very open about last year being a disappointment, and he battled injuries, played through a lot of injuries, and just didn't have the numbers. But we haven't seen what we saw those first five games when the trade happened 2 years ago. I mean, he was a monster. And we haven't seen it yet. And I still think it's going to come because, as I said, I thought he had a really good training camp in preseason, but it has not been there in the first four games.
All right. Thanks for doing this. Just finish it up with this. What do you think happens Monday night?
Yeah, I'm expecting a close game. I'm gonna pick Washington. I just think that is a team that it's a better team right now, and I'm a little nervous about that matchup we talked about earlier about the Washington run game against the Bears run defense. I think what's important for the Bears is to not make the game bigger than it is. You said at the top, right? Like, this is just a regular game for Washington. And the Bears are trying to make that. That's just a regular game, but I think it's going to be so hard for a lot of those guys to walk in that building and not think, we have to win this game after what happened last year. And, maybe that's part of it. But I just think right now, where these two organizations are at, the Commanders are just ahead. But I do think it's really close.
Thanks for doing this. Enjoyed it. Kevin Fishbane, everybody. Also, not only writes for The Athletic, he's the host of Breaking In with Kevin Fishbane, a podcast you can get anywhere you get podcasts. Thanks. Enjoy the trip up here, or out here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. Kevin Fishbane. Not up here. No, it's not up here. It's out there. It's out here. Traveling east. Different time zone. Monday night. Football. All right, let's go back to what we were asking, and if you want to jump back on the phones, you can do that, 301-230-0980. I'll give you the update on the poll as well. After Philadelphia's loss last night, who do you got in the NFC East? And there's also something from last night's game I have not talked about, but it did get pretty old and pretty slowed down in the moment last night for about 2.5 minutes of game time. Discuss tush push stuff when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So before we get back to the phone lines, who you got in the NFC East? The other part of the Eagles game last night that, you know, again, once again, generated a lot of response, most of it, I think, appropriately negative, is the Eagles running four straight tush pushes, starting with a third and one at the Giant 3-yard line, down 13-10 midway through the second quarter. They didn't get it. Then the next one on fourth and one, they got it. And then first and goal at the one, they didn't get it. And then on second and goal at the one, they got it. Four straight tush pushes. Apparently, it's a record. It doesn't seem like a record to me. It seems like they've done it four times in a row, three times in a row in other games. And that's the nature of this play because it's just so hideously boring. It's like I've said before, there are so many elements to this that have to be considered. I still can't believe they did not outlaw this before the season. But number one is, it is a play that has total predictability. You know, it doesn't matter how many times. Once they line up, you know the final result 94% of the time will end in a first down. It's sort of like what the old extra point was, you know, at 94-95%. That's why they moved it back to 33 yards to create some drama associated with it. So it's a play that is utterly predictable in terms of the ultimate result, which isn't what the NFL wants. Four of them in a row, and I've mentioned this before, and people took me to task, and I understand the reason why. When I said it slows the pace of the game, many of you responded with, well, no, it doesn't. It's not like they, you know, stop the clock or anything like that. The clock runs. That's true. I'm not talking about it literally. I'm talking about last night, 2 minutes and 6 seconds of the game clock rolling by for four plays that have literally no drama to them at all. None. These are moments in which you can literally get up, go to the bathroom, get up, go get something to eat. This is not going to be anything resembling a normal scrimmage play, which is we don't really know what's going to happen on this play. The other thing, too, and I've mentioned this many times, is that the Eagles, I think, have given up a lot of yards by not running normal plays. We know what third and one, fourth and one, potential big play, chunk play, that exists in those situations more than they do in other situations. Now, you can make the argument, hey, I'd rather retain possession and not have to punt or take the risk of punting. I get it. But they take away big play opportunities, and they need big play opportunities. And lastly, it's just not officiated. Once again, last night, there's a clear false start from the right guard. Does not get called. They're not officiating. They're not enforcing the rules with the play. I honestly would put it at 0% chance that this play exists next year. They will institute the rule that says no aiding via push or pull of any runner at any time behind the line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage. It was a rule that was in place all the way through 2006, was it? And then the rules changed. So for most of our football watching days, for most of us, this rule existed. It was not allowed. Four straight tush pushes last night. Utter boredom. And it's just, it's got to go. It's an abomination to watch. And I'll say it a million times. You can believe me if you want, or you don't have to if you're an Eagle fan. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's you. If it were the Panthers doing it, I would feel the same way. If the Panthers were good and we were seeing it in the biggest highlighted games every week. 2 minutes and 6 seconds of nothing. Nothing. No chance for anything exciting to happen. 2 minutes and 6 seconds of football. That cannot happen moving forward. It won't. There's no chance. I'd bet my firstborn on it. All right, back to the question of the day. After Philly's loss last night, who do you have in the NFC East? I put a poll up at Kevin Sheehan DC if you want to vote. Right now, yeah, of course. Over 600 votes in the first hour. Washington, 80.8%. Philly, 14.3% of the vote. Dallas, 3.5%. The Giants at 1.4%. I think Washington can win the division because I thought they could win it before the season started because I think they've got the best quarterback in the division. So that's my default. Now we have more information. Philly's struggling, at least for now. They could get it together. They're certainly capable of it. Dallas is a bit of a surprise. Best offense yardage-wise in the NFL, certainly can put points up on the board, and they're not even healthy on offense. Could they get to the point where defensively they get a little healthier and they get to the point where they're just bad instead of horrific and they have the kind of season our team had last year? I don't know. It's the NFL. They need to be a lot better on defense, though. A lot better, or at least opportunistic. Because I don't think Dak is Jaden in terms of the overall threat posed to a defense. He's playing well, though. Max likes Washington. I like Washington to win the NFC East. Let's go to our guy Ryland, our favorite Canadian friend who lives in Oklahoma City. Go ahead.
Hey, Kev. Good morning, buddy. Just living the dream, my man. Let's start with the tush push. I think that's a joke, and the Eagles are as well. I think something's going on there, and it's bigger than just the turmoil in there. I think Hurts is not an elite quarterback. I don't know what he is, but he's not elite. The Giants with the rookie will be fun to watch, but they're not real. The Cowboys, like you say, are a shock, but I refuse to believe in that team because of the culture issue at the top. And on the other side of Dan, I think that I can see that more clearly now. So I'm saying the Skins are winning with 12 wins, but a big one Monday night, that's for sure.
I don't think it's going to be 12. I predicted 11-6 regular season. I think that's in play, but I have a feeling, Ryland, it's going to be a division that's won with like 10 wins. Maybe 11 will be required because the NFC East has, as we know, the AFC West, and it has the NFC North. And you got games with the Lions and the Packers among division teams, still with the Chiefs and the Chargers and the Broncos. There's a lot left here, and I'm still skeptical about what Washington can be defensively against the better teams, the healthier teams in the league. But I could see a season like last year. Last year they won 12. I could see a season like last year where maybe it's a game or two less, but still just get into the dance with Jaden at quarterback. Our guy Mark in Largo, what's up? Who you got winning the division?
I'm not wavering from what I said in the beginning of the season. I got them going 14-3. Now, I waver with the two losses, but I think the two losses, understanding everything there is. Look, this game Monday night is a bigger game psychologically for the Bears, and that's where I think the way the Bears are coming into this game is great for if you're a Commanders fan and the Commanders, because they're so focused on what happened last year, that they don't realize that Washington's a much better team this year than they were last year. And that's where I think...
They have the capability of being a better team on Monday night than they were last year on that Sunday afternoon.
I would agree. And I just think that Washington... Look, let's look at the other... Dallas... Who is Dallas? Okay, Dallas played a great game against Green Bay. I personally think if Washington runs the ball against Green Bay, it's a better game. I don't know if they win, but it's a better game if they run the football. Just like I think if they ran the football against Atlanta, it's a better game. They probably beat Atlanta if Jaden's in there and they run the football. But my thing with Dallas is, name me somebody who Dallas has beaten that's credible. Nobody. And the meat of this game.
Well, they tied Green Bay. Tough. Credible.
Okay. And we're finding out that Green Bay – it's kind of fraudulent. We're finding that out right now.
Let's wait on that one.
Cincinnati on Sunday. They're going to lose Cincinnati on Sunday.
You really? They're going to lose as a 15-point favorite?
Don't call me crazy because I was the same person.
Look, nothing's crazy. And I'll tell you what, I always look at the games in which survivor pool players will load up on one team. And anybody that hasn't had the Packers in a survivor pool this weekend will have the Packers against the Bengals. So those games are always a little bit scary. But I think Green Bay coming off the bye week, et cetera, that they're going to be ready to roll.
Receivers are hungry, and you got a quarterback that can get them the ball. But back to the
yeah, but you don't have a line that can block for the 41-year-old quarterback.
That may be true, too. That's why I don't understand why they didn't go after Jameis Winston or Russell Wilson, but that's another story for the Cincinnati Bengals. That's
Did you see Russ in there last night for the few plays he got in there? He's terrible.
Well, that's true, too.
I'm going to do to you what you do to me all the time. I'm going to become uncoachable here. You know, Russell Wilson was an absolute, I think, lock Hall of Famer after his Seattle days. And what'll be interesting with his case is, will Denver, Pittsburgh, and the Giants leave this lasting impression of a diva quarterback who couldn't do it even close to the way a Hall of Famer is supposed to do it at the end of his career?
I would agree.
Digress for a moment, but go ahead.
No, it's quite all right. Look, I think if Jaden is upright, he's clearly the best quarterback in the NFC East and maybe the best quarterback in the NFC, period.
Yep.
I know people will have arguments with that. Maybe they will say Jared Goff. Look, Kevin, I don't think Jared Goff, if he's quarterbacking against Washington, he becomes one-dimensional against them. That's why I don't see Detroit beating us when they play us. I don't see them beating
Well, they didn't need to be one-dimensional against us last year. They should have kept handing the ball off to Jahmyr Gibbs. That's what they should have done.
Well, so you can't run on Washington this year. Now, you could throw on Washington, and that's
okay.
Where I think
Well, when you say you can't run on them, let's wait until they play like a team that really likes to line it up and run it against teams, because Bijan looked pretty good.
Line it up and run. Atlanta lines it up and run.
Yeah, and it was an okay day stopping the run. An okay day.
That's true.
It wasn't a great day. It was an okay day. All right,
that's true.
You got Washington winning the division, right?
14-3.
Okay.
Represent the NFC in the Super Bowl and beating Buffalo in the Super Bowl just to piss off Bills fans.
Stay on hold, everybody else. We'll do one more segment of this. Ben will join us at 12 smell test picks next hour.
All right. Happy Football Friday, everybody. We start off with a recap of Thursday Night Football. The Giants, they beat up on the Philadelphia Eagles in a game of man football. The human wrecking ball, Cam Scatabo, puts up 3 touchdowns, and Jackson Dart completes just under 70% of his passes. The Giants beat the Philadelphia Eagles 34-17. And the Philadelphia Phillies, they fall to the Dodgers in a heartbreaker that goes into extras. Orion Kerkering loaded up the bases and has a dribbler that ends up at his feet, decides to throw it home, and the ball just ends up way too far away from JT Realmuto. Dodgers walk it off and advance to the NLCS. The Chicago Cubs, they force Game 5 against the Milwaukee Brewers. Bit of a bullpen game, but it came together for Chicago as they shut down the Brewers. Michael Busch, Kyle Tucker, and Ian Happ, all with homers for the Cubs. They win 6-0. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all of football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment brought to you by IHOP, introducing the IHOP value menu, where all your breakfast faves are just $6 each every day. Where else can you get a big filling sit-down breakfast for only $6? Go to your happy plates with the $6 IHOP value menu available every day at IHOP, $7 in some locations. Who do you got winning the NFC East? Bones, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, man, thanks for taking my call. Shout out to my main man, Max, man. You know, man, it's not a question with me. You know, I ain't hesitant, and you know, none of that. It's the burgundy and gold. I got the burgundy and gold, plain and simple. I ain't got no buts. I ain't got no ifs about nothing or none of that. It's the burgundy and gold going to win the NFC East. And you know what, Kevin? Man, about that Philly thing, man, I'm in my, you know, I'm still in my feelings about them people going to play for the Phillies, man, from the Nets, man, especially Bryce Harper, man. So I ain't feeling them.
That wasn't his fault. I'm one of them ones. Yeah, well, the whole Bryce Harper thing, I've never understood it. The Nets clearly didn't want him as much as Philadelphia did. Thanks, Bones. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jason and Laurel. Jason, who do you have winning the NFC East now that Philly seems to be in big trouble?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, you and Max, as always. Look, you know where I'm at. Look, there's blood in the water, and it's not in our waters. Philly's vulnerable. AC's vulnerable. I think Baltimore's vulnerable. Detroit's got to prove they can beat us. I just think not only is the East in play, I think this is the Super Bowl window. And I know things can change, but I wish one of our games against Philly was like in the next couple of weeks instead of at the end of the season. There's two games on the rest of our schedule
right
now, today, scare me, and that's the Seattle game because it's a short week, and the Denver game. I think we could run the table. Other than those two games, are the only ones that make me nervous. Now, you're right. Philly can bring it up. Philly can bring it up. But, Kev, we have the best quarterback in the NFC. We're not healthy, and we're running and establishing a run identity. Who knows how many of these rookie the weak things that Bill's going to win. I mean, this looks good. This looks like this could be a year where that Super Bowl window is open. And I'm excited. I am shaking like my washing machine overloaded on spin cycle.
That's a loud spin too. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. Look,
thanks, Kev.
I think they're in this window. We've talked about it since the end of last year, rookie quarterback contract window. I think the development here, 6 weeks, 5 weeks into the season, with the first game in week six being played, is just how deep with legitimately good teams, we'll find out if any of them are great, the NFC overall is. Let's go to Paulie. Paulie, go ahead.
Big guy, man. Hail to the W.
Hail to W.
Of course I got us winning the division, man. As long as we stay to the formula of feeding Shaq and then let Kobe go to work, man, this shouldn't be too much of a problem. But I'm going to tell you what I seen last night. Last night was like looking in the mirror because that team right there, the Giants, they believe in their quarterback now. And belief is an amazing thing. You know, that's what happened to us last year. Once the team started believing in Jaden, it felt like it was nothing, a game they couldn't win.
Right.
And that's the type of feeling I'm seeing out there in East Rutherford. You know?
So what are you saying? Are you saying that the Giants will end up being the biggest competition in the NFC East for Washington?
I think so, man. Because look at the quarterback skills. Dart can do what Jaden can do. He can throw it. He can run it. You know, better than the other two guys. You know, the league better be, the division's lucky that Neighbors is out. But that team would really be feeling itself. You know, Eagles are going through the motion.
I'm buying a lot of what you're selling. Now, do I think that they can actually get to, you know, that point in the season in which they're, you know, 8-6 or 9-7 or, you know, 9-6 and they're legitimately in it? I think it's a bit of a stretch at this point because of no Neighbors, to your point, because he is a true rookie who they weren't even sure of should start the regular season. And by the way he plays, man, he takes a lot of hits. And I know Jaden did too. You know, he's left two games now that he has started in. He's left two games banged up in the middle of those games.
What's the one thing you always used to say, Shane?
What
about the Giants? They are very talented on defense.
They are. They are.
They might have had some defense in the division. Yep. You know, so in saying that, running the ball, they'll get scatterboo the ball. So they're not scared to, you know, to take the heat off the quarterback. So
yep.
I got the Giants as a team that we need to be looking out for.
All right. Holler at you later. Let's finish it up. Bobby in North Carolina. Quickly, Bobby, go ahead.
Hi, Cam. I still think we have a chance. But, I mean, Philly's not going away. They're too talented. But, Kevin, we've caught a huge break already. We were two games behind them a couple weeks ago. We started out slow compared to what I thought we were going to be. Played without Jaden two games. Monday night is a huge spot because we've got two tough rookies. Dallas will be a brutal test for us just because they're very good offensive. But we're in a big spot Monday night. We got to win our home games. And if you would have told me before the season started that we would have played without JD.
Bobby, you're breaking up, but I get your point. And I do look, every week I think they'll have a chance because Daniels is out there. If he's not out there, their chances aren't as great. You look at Dallas, at Chiefs, Seattle at home, Lions, you know, and then 2 weeks later, Denver at home. Those are toss-up games, man. The point spread is going to be super short either way by the time we get there. So you look at home on Monday night, and you're like, you got to take care of these home games, especially the ones where you're not playing the Lions, you're not playing Denver, you're not playing, you know, Dallas or Philly. Yeah, I see that. Getting to 4-2 is big. 3-3, we're going to have some of the same conversations. I can see it coming right now on Tuesday that we had after the Atlanta game. Context is everything, how it happens, etc. But it's not going to be easy Monday night either. You're catching a team off a bye that's won two in a row with a creative offensive guy as their head coach and a quarterback that's gaining confidence. We'll have a lot more on that one coming up on Monday. All right, this upcoming hour, Ben Standing next. We've got smell test picks. We'll go around the NFL. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. Don't forget, we are free and live on the Odyssey app, and all of our NFL talk on this show is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.